It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. It is... Hey, this is a holiday month. November is a holiday month. And we are ramping up for that. Good morning, Wes Moss, your host, here with Andrew Barag to answer your calls and your questions. Ryan Ely out on assignment, let's say. Out on assignment. Andrew Barag here with me this morning, and we're taking your calls and your questions. You're on a chilly November morning here on a Sunday. So if you're headed to church or work, or if you're working here on the weekend, or headed to brunch, I'm here in the studio for the next hour. Or so, along with Ben Moss here joining me. Typically, I'll have Luke or Jake, two of my middle children, here on a Sunday morning. With just great enthusiasm, they come into the studio. And I say that completely facetiously, as they used to love to come in. They thought it was so cool. Dad, oh, let's go to the radio studio. Now, they could absolutely, I could tell them, hey, boys, we're going to muck stalls. And if you didn't grow up on a farm, that's basically cleaning up after a horse. You know, you go in every, that's what I did growing up, mucking stalls and cleaning up barns. That's part of what I did growing up. My kids just have to go to the radio studio. So I think it's a lot easier. They still think of it about like I thought of mucking stalls on the weekend. But anyway, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. The number here in the studio on this Sunday morning, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750. The number here in the studio, or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Coping with uncertainty in retirement. That's what we're talking about today. We're hitting all-time highs. All-time highs. All-time highs of what? We are hitting all-time highs for uncertainty. Yeah, the market's done very well in the last couple of weeks. But there is an index that tracks uncertainty here for the United States. It's called the Global Policy Economic Uncertainty Index. It's a whole operation that tracks uncertainty that impacts us here in the United States. And that I'm going to go into. And they measure uncertainty in a very interesting way. And again, you think about all the different ways things can go wrong. And if you think back, I'll go back and look at, let's say, since 1990, a couple of examples. We had the Gulf War, right? We had the Russian crisis, the currency crisis, which brought down one of the largest hedge funds on the planet, long-term capital management. Then we had September 11th. Then we had the second Gulf War. Then we had Lehman Brothers and TARP. And then we had, which again, the bailout. Then we had the euro crisis around the world. Remember Greece? Remember Greece almost was sunk by their own debt? The uncertainty around the world continues. If you're actually tracking it empirically, and there's three ways that the Policy Uncertainty Index effectively tracks. This is the Economic Policy Uncertainty Index globally. Global Economic Policy Uncertainty Index. You can literally look at a chart, just like a stock chart, except this is tracking global uncertainty. And global uncertainty has continued to rise. You would think ever since the great financial crisis, 2008, 9, early 2010, you would think that we'd be slowly, just slowly receding with how scary the world is. But we had this, we haven't seen that. We saw it spike in 2008, 2009, again, all different kinds of uncertainty. And then it's continued to move higher and higher and higher. And here we sit with markets continuing to push up on the best that we've seen, yet uncertainty, as measured empirically, is still at an all-time high. Trade war, Brexit, elections in the U.S., EU, euro, bond, debt, crisis, political confusion. Yeah, well, listen, we're more confused, or there's more uncertainty today than we've ever seen. And here's how they measure that. There's a three parts of measuring policy uncertainty: economic uncertainty, political uncertainty. One, the way that this operation, or the company, the research company does this, is they take three main measures to try to measure effectively, get a litmus test on how we are feeling and how much uncertainty you and I are facing. Well, they scan newspapers. They scan the top 10 newspapers in the United States. So they'll take a look at USA Today, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the LA Times, Washington Post, top 10 newspapers, and they will literally measure words that argue uncertainty. Here's a change. Here is a disagreement. Here is angst. They measure angst, the verbiage of angst. And that will add to, and this is whether it's policy or politics or economically or stock market, and that will give a weighting towards what the index does. Number two, they will look at the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, and they will look at anything that is changing from a fiscal perspective. So they'll look at tax policy and they'll say, okay, we know taxes. Here are the rules today. How many rules are either going to change or expire in the coming year? Again, very, very, think about it as a business owner or you just try to do your taxes. What's your biggest line on them? It's not your mortgage. It's not healthcare. It's taxes. That is your biggest expense. That's our biggest expense as Americans. It comes right off the top. Well, if you don't know what that's going to be, you are in an uncertain place. It makes it more difficult to plan. So we look at uncertainty when it comes to policy on your taxes. Number three, we look at, or the Policy Uncertainty Index looks at the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. And they look at the professional forecasters at the Fed. And then they look at the dispersion amongst all those professional forecasters on what they're saying will happen with other economic data. Think the CPI, so the Consumer Price Index. What's inflation going to do? What's growth in general going to do? What are jobs going to do? And you look at dispersion between professional forecasters. And then the wider that dispersion, the more uncertain there is. You put them all together and you effectively get a line that looks a lot like a stock chart, except this stock chart is showing that we are in more uncertain territory than we've ever seen. And that's why here we are economically with a, call it a B-plus economy. You could probably be a stretch to call this an A-minus economy if we were to grade it, but we're still at a B-plus economy, and we are still seeing more uncertainty than we've ever seen. This week, I met with one of the principals of Vanguard named Paul Bossi, who's responsible for communicating what Vanguard is thinking about the economy and about the probability of recession, and then portfolio construction. What do you do in the time, in the world that we live in today? How do I position my retirement funds? Well, before Vanguard, he was the chairman of the investment committee for the DuPont, basically the DuPont pension fund. So think about billions and billions of dollars that is going to be paid out over the next 50 years. That has to be managed in the most professional way possible. And he ran global tactical asset allocation for DuPont. Now he's at Vanguard. Now, what did he say about the world that we live in? And I love the research. Vanguard, yes, they were the early proprietor of the index fund, but they do a lot more than that today. They're, first of all, arguably the largest asset manager in the world, $5 trillion plus under management. They've got this enormous economic research team, and they're watching the economy just like my team's watching the economy. So the takeaway from Vanguard was an interesting one. Here's how they would assess where we are in this economy. Ready for this? Down, but not out. That's the best they could do. That's the best they could come up with. Down, but not out. Okay. Well, that's their mantra right now for the U.S. economy. Next year, they give a 50% probability of a shallow recession. Now, wait a minute before you get scared about that. Whoa. What does that mean? Remember, a real recession is two negative quarters of GDP. Things have to be going pretty wrong in the United States to get two negative quarters of gross domestic product going in reverse, declining. Not slower growth, actually going negative. A shallow recession means that maybe only happens for a couple of months, maybe only one quarter. So they actually don't see a real full-blown recession. They're giving the possibility of a shallow recession at 50%. And quite frankly, if you think about it, isn't there always a 50-50 toss-up that we're going to have a slow quarter? I mean, we can have a hurricane. We can have two hurricanes and a blizzard and get a bad quarter of growth here in the United States. So there's always a possibility that we get a slowdown or one quarter. It's always a coin toss that we could see. We get let's say geopolitically, and then we get weather-related events. Let's say we get a two-month blizzard or two-week blizzard in the Northeast. It shuts down the most productive part of the country, arguably, or the largest part, and then the GDP numbers go negative for a couple of months or a month or two. So it looks to me as though I'm not too nervous about a 50% probability of a shallow recession, means one quarter of only one quarter of negative GDP growth. That's hardly a bump in the road. But I do think this. I think that we are on, if you're looking at the economy and you're looking at the stock market, it's almost like we're on this knife's edge of economic data. We could go, we're easily fall off to the good side, easily fall off to a side that is not so welcome. Only a couple of months ago, manufacturing numbers in the United States went negative. Wait a minute, like not just slower growth like we've seen and worried about, but actually going negative, meaning contraction. Now, that's not good news. That was just a couple months ago. Remember the line for manufacturing, anything below 50, we're in contraction. Anything above 50, we're in expansion. A couple of months ago, we were in the 49 range. If we were below 50, it means we were shrinking, contracting. Well, now here we are in November, and we're back above that line. We're back to expansion. We're at 51.3. So we're expanding again. But clearly, there are a lot of countries around the world that have been slowing. So if you look at Germany, slowing. The United Kingdom, slowing. China, slowing pretty dramatically because they're taking a bigger brunt of the trade war than we are here in the United States. So we look around the world, and that is a big reason why you see the Federal Reserve lowering interest rates. Even though, hey, the economy is pretty good, why are they lowering interest rates? Why do we need that here? Why do we need stimulus in the United States? Well, the Fed's worried about the rest of the world slowing down and slowing us as well. So here we are in this knife's edge, and we end up in what I've been calling all year kind of muddle through. We are kind of, I keep thinking of running along the beach, right along the tide, the sand is wet, and you can still run through it, and you can still cover ground, but it's harder. It's kind of this muddle through. And I think there's a number of reasons why muddle through is happening, and it's okay. I actually think muddle through is a good thing. And we're going to talk about why muddle through in a slowly growing economy may be a really good spot to be in. Good morning. You're listening to Money Matters. Look, straight ahead, we've got weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here with me, Wes Moss, here at 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. Wes Moss, your host, along with Andrew Bragg here this morning to take your calls and your questions. If you've been thinking about something this week and just worried about the world that we live in, and hey, what do I do now that the market's done so well over the last year, really the last couple of months as it's kind of surged higher, where do you go from here? Where do we go from here? And that's always the question. It doesn't mean matter how well we've done. Great. That's great. Your portfolio is up 25% this year. Wonderful. Up 15% this year for a balanced portfolio. Amazing. Where do we go from here? That's always the question. So if you're thinking that through and you're wondering if you should do a Roth conversion or a 401k allocation change or something, we're here for the next half hour until 10 o'clock to take those calls and questions. So give us a call here in the studio. We're live here this Sunday morning, 404-872-0750 is the number. Again, 404-872-0750 or 800-WSB-TALK. So we're talking about uncertainty, and again, we're measuring this through policyuncertainty.com, and I talked about in the first part of the show how we empirically get to this. We scan newspapers. You look at CBO tax changes or the Congressional Budget Office expiring or upcoming changes. Then you look at professional economic forecasters and the dispersion of what they're seeing, and then you get this uncertainty measure. Interestingly, the uncertainty level that we see today that we're living in, literally this week, this month, is twice the level that we have seen over the previous 23 years. So we are, the world that we live in, let's call it really since the financial crisis, it's stayed elevated. It actually gotten even, there's even more uncertainty than what we saw in 2008, 2009. It's hard to believe that it's even more uncertain today. I remember that as a scarier time. You're just looking at unemployment numbers. We've got to run to break. So we'll do that as soon as we get back from break. Your calls, your questions, policy uncertainty. Where do we go from here? That's always the question when it comes to retirement. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. More Money Matters right here on WSB Radio straight ahead.
WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. We've got another half hour here for the show. So good morning. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. From either 9 to 11, today 9 to 10, because Bulldog Brunch coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Andrew Bragg here with me. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, it's easy to do so. Just go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Good morning. Uncertainty. Here we are in a world that markets are keep hitting highs, which in the markets, S&P 500, the Dow, the NASDAQ, another nice run this past week. Yet uncertainty keeps rising, and I guess the question is, where do we go from here, and why is uncertainty at such a high? In the beginning of the show, I talked about how the policyuncertainty.com as an organization measures uncertainty, and they've been doing this in a consistent way. So the fact that uncertainty today is twice the level that we've seen over the previous 23 years. It's an interesting study on just how confused individuals are. And it might be political divide. That might be part of it. I'll give you an example from this week. So first of all, if you think about all the different things that go into policy uncertainty, you think about the trade war, of course, lots of policy uncertainty. Brexit, again, lots of policy. That's elections. They're going back and forth to figure out how the UK is going to leave the European Union. And then in the middle of all that, as that doesn't get resolved, trade still not resolved, Brexit still not resolved, you keep getting more and more elections in the middle of what is already a very murky soup. And then every so often you get another crisis on top of that. Think about the Eurobond crisis or another debt crisis or a government shutdown or a budget disagreement here in the United States. Political confusion at an all-time high. Think about just this week, legendary Paul Tudor Jones. Every once in a while, you'll hear about Paul Tudor Jones. Only guy that's ever had 25 straight years of beating the S&P 500. Genius. Paul Tudor Jones. Here's what he said. But first of all, I'm going to talk about what he came on CNBC and talked about this week. So first of all, he is, and again, this is a kind of a political dichotomy. We talked about every so often, I'll bring up a political or econopolitical dichotomy, where the individual is not necessarily seemingly dissuaded or persuaded by their political side. So Paul Tudor Jones, from everything I can see, clearly a Democrat. He likes Pete Buttigieg. And that's Mayor Pete, right? Mayor Pete, we know, is a Democrat. Is what he says. As president, I will not measure success by the size of the stock market or gross domestic product. Well, I don't know. Those are two pretty good measures. Definitely gross domestic product. I mean, that is the measure of the economy. Does the economy grow or not? So he's not going to measure it by that. Okay. He's going to measure it by whether people have jobs, if they're succeeding, middle-class families succeeding. Well, my thought is that GDP keeps growing, typically good for everyone, but I'm not here to weigh in on this debate politically. We're talking about the economy here. In the United States, economic gains should be shared by everyone and everyone should have a fair shot. I can't disagree with that. But the point here is that Paul Tudor Jones loves Buttigieg. Keep that in mind. So he's a Democrat. Paul Tudor Jones took a poll at his firm, macroeconomic traders, all the traders that are at his hedge fund, his money management firm that's done so well for so many years. Smart group, very smart group of people. The consensus is this. If Warren, That's Elizabeth Warren. If Elizabeth Warren wins the election, stock market down 25%. Whoa! If Elizabeth Warren wins the election, stock market down 25%. That is a massive number. Trump wins the election, stock market up 15%. Warren down 25, Trump up 15. That's a 40% spread. A 40% spread on a $25 trillion asset. And we're talking about a massive, massive move here in either direction. No wonder uncertainty. No wonder the uncertainty index is at an all-time high. We're back to what we were talking about in the beginning of the show. We're kind of on a knife's edge. Economy can be really good or, oh, wait a minute, really bad. Really good, really bad. And again, it's a big part of why I think we see the uncertainty index at an all-time high. Now, and the reason I bring up the point that he is a Democrat is that what he's talking about is if a Democrat wins, you see a really bad stock market. So it doesn't seem biased as though he's a Democrat. Hey, if a Democrat wins, things are going to be great. He's saying, hey, I'm a Democrat, and if Warren wins, stock market down 25%. That's Paul Tudor Jones. That's what he's out on kind of this campaign talking about this week. No wonder uncertainty in the United States is at an all-time high. Now, there is a tremendous amount of trauma that I think we're all still, I don't know if we're recovering. I think recovery is the wrong word. It is part of our psyche. It's part of who we are. The uncertainty that we've seen ever since 2008 has just continued to climb, continued to get higher and higher. So we get euro debt. Then remember, we had the United States credit rating downgraded. We're supposed to be the safest asset in the world. United States credit rating downgraded. And of course, the different elections, Brexit, political divide, trade wars with Mexico, trade wars with China, trade war with the European Union, impeachment inquiry. So yes, uncertainty. It's just part of what we have come to live with. We are rich with uncertainty now. What's also interesting, if you look at the unemployment rate and you look at it by month, this is part of the reason why difficult economic times are just tattooed in our brains. I mean, it's real. It's not something we're healing from. It's just something I think we are living with. We were talking to Andrew earlier today, and we go back. I said, let's look at these unemployment numbers. Remember, we 2009 started the year. The unemployment was already going up because 2008 was a bad year, and we got to about a 7.5% unemployment rate. And then by the end of the year, we were at a 10% unemployment rate in 2009, 10% unemployment. And I continue to remind us that we went from 5% all the way to 10%. It wasn't that 5% of people, extra people, that caused a massive recession. It was the 90% of people that kept their jobs that were scared to death they were going to lose their jobs. That's what created massive uncertainty. So we got to 10% unemployment, and then all that whole next year, even though the economy had recovered technically, we were out of recession, unemployment rate stayed in the nines the entire next year. Andrew was was interviewing for jobs in 08 and 09 and 2010, and he'd interview for a job, and then a month later, they'd say, I'm sorry, that job's not even, we're not even interviewing for that job anymore. The job is no longer... We're not even hiring for that anymore. We didn't hire somebody. We're just not hiring anybody. And that was what America was like for several years in a row. 2011, things had really recovered. Yet the unemployment rate stayed in the 9% range for most of the year. 2012, we were way out of the woods. We were in the 8% unemployment range for most of that year. It took a really long time for things to get better. And that's what we remember as Americans. That's what we remember. And that's why there's so much of this uncertainty that just stuck with us. It's not going to go away. It's just who we are now. We're nervous about the future because things can get bad, and then they can stay bad for a long time. But the good news is this. Companies really don't care. Companies don't care. Now, listen, yes, maybe they do care a little bit. And CEOs care about policy, and CEOs care about the direction of politics, but they deal with the environment they're in. They deal with the cards they are dealt, And companies, which, again, that's what we invest in going into retirement. We invest in corporations. We either buy stock in corporations or we effectively loan them money because we're buying bonds. Those companies navigate the environment the very best that they can. And oftentimes, those are the very smartest people on the planet, in the world, doing that navigation. And they move forward and they produce in spite of all the uncertainty. And in spite of the scary and uncertain world that we live in. I mean, we're learning to live with it. We are learning to live with the economic carnage of 2008 and 9 and 2010. But we're just never going to forget it. We just don't forget it. And that is part of why I think we're in this kind of muddle through. Even though things are good, there's still not escape velocity. It's still not as though we're headed to the moon economically. So we invest accordingly, knowing that things can go bad and they can go bad fairly quickly, to make sure that our investments match with our expected outcomes. And that's the other thought about investing, is that we've got to make sure we are invested, you are invested, to make sure that your investments match to some extent how you expect the outcome to be. It's never going to be a perfect match, but our expected outcomes for the ups and the expected outcomes for the down, or the risk that we're taking that we know we're going to have to face. Now, think of it this way. It's not necessarily about getting the very best rates of return. On the surface, you think, oh, I want to get the best rate. I want to get the best rate I can. But investing as a whole, it's not about getting the very best rate of return. It's about getting the very best rates of return that you can handle, that you can live with. And that all starts with your goals. And as we talk about financial planning and investing, it's really about your particular set of circumstances and goals in your life and all the things that you've designated your money for. So money to spend in retirement doing what? Well, your core pursuits. That's what happy retirees do. They have almost four different hobbies on steroids. That is a common trait among happy retirees. Money for your family, maybe money for your family legacy, money for your spouse, money for your children, money for your grandkids. That's what you're really thinking about long term. So we've got to match up our goals with how we invest. We match up our investments with our tolerance for the uncertainty, as we've been talking about today, the uncertainty of the world and what makes it, whatever markets throw at us. And when you come to peace with that, when you come to peace with the way you're invested matches up with your goals about what matters to you, how you feel, or you understand yourself, it's about understanding yourself as an investor, that's a powerful place to be. That's where we're trying to get, not just the very best rate of return. It's about getting the very best rate of return to meet your goals and the very best rate of return that you can handle. We know that stocks over time, at least historically, have been the very best place to be. Well, then why isn't everybody just 100% in stocks? That's where we're going to probably make the most money. We don't know that, but it's happened for 200 years. Why argue against that for the next 20, 30, 40 years? Well, we'd all be 100% in stocks if we could handle it. But we go through these long periods of time where stocks maybe aren't so good, and they're very, very difficult to deal with, and they're very emotional. And you see large sums of money go down and down, and you get through a really difficult period of time. And you say, why am I 100% in stocks? I can't handle this. That's why balance is our friend. Balance is really the key to make sure that the money is producing, even when we go through difficult times, the very best it can do, and to make sure it achieves the goals that you need, the goals for your family. And that is the point of talking through navigating uncertainty, understanding uncertainty, and then making sure that you understand yourself as an investor and you're investing alongside it. It's all about investing to match how you expect things to end up, or really what you can handle. It's about getting the very best rates of return to meet your goals and that you can handle. And that's what it's all about. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. We're going to do weather traffic. I think I have time for a story when I get back. We're going to do that straight ahead. Stay tuned. 95.5 WSB. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. I think I have time for a quick story. Andrew and I are just talking about Rick and Debbie from this week. So this story, Rick and Debbie, both age 69, both widowed. So they're 69. They both went through dealing with the loss of a spouse in their mid-60s. A very, very rough time. Very, very difficult. Very sad time, obviously, for them. It was sad to see. But Rick and Debbie, though, remarried. They got married together, the two of them, 3 years ago. So they went through a difficult time, but now having actually a wonderful time. So the story is kind of it's a kind of a heartwarming story to see them now. And it is wonderful to see, but they are from very different economic backgrounds. By the way, I knew Rick, I didn't know Debbie. So very difficult economic backgrounds. One from construction, that's where Rick's from. So if you think about that industry, it's kind of a risky industry. So he's a risk taker. Debbie worked for the government and had a pension. So together they have enough income today, but they'd like to leave some money to their kids, and they each have two grown children. So Rick is 80% in stocks, and he's completely fine with that, even though he's almost 70. Debbie, though, on the other hand, completely fine to leave her money in the G fund and CDs. By the way, the G fund is the government bond fund in the thrift savings plan. So totally conservative. She knows that she's probably missing out on long-term returns, but she's completely fine with that because her income goals are taken care of and she's happy to continue on a more conservative path. John is fine to continue with the amount of risk that he's taking. 80% in stocks, that's a lot for his age. Ironically, you look at their money as a collective pie, the balance is actually kind of right in line with my 15-50 stock rule. If you haven't read about that, you can find that on westmoss.com. But bottom line is both of them are at peace with how they are invested. Arguably, one's too risky and one's too conservative. But because in the end, their family goals are met, that's what really matters when you're investing. And from my perspective, they're doing it right. How you feel or how you understand yourself as an investor, when you can do that, that's a really powerful place to be. So thanks for tuning into Money Matters. You can find me and the Money Matters team. Go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Articles about the 15-50 stock rule, the 4% withdrawal rule, updated research on how much money you can pull from your retirement assets and be at peace with that and not worry about running out of money. That's also at wesmoss.com. Let's look for the 4% rule. Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday. Stay tuned to the best programming on the planet right here, 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk.